Our Man in China, Episode 9, Campus Life and Death to My Fifth Generation of Children. My girlfriend's return home to the UK coincided with a time when I was ostracised to the city limits, where I found myself living on a university campus of thousands of Chinese students, teaching some of them business English. After the relationship broke down with my employer at the weekend school for rich children, due to my having missed two Saturday sessions, admittedly because of late Friday night antics, the school went behind my back and cancelled my foreign working document, as crucial as the visa itself to working in China, if not more. They sacked me with warm smiles and wished me all the best, knowing full well I would not work again in either the region nor the rest of China without this document. It was with some luck and the Chinese way of relationships, Guanxi, that saved my skin. I owed a lot to a couple of young teaching administrators at the university for putting their necks on the line for me in acquiring a document. This was no small feat, and they risked their own working future in doing so. A Chinese can call on maybe one or two of these favours in their lifetime. Once they had obtained these documents for me and another friend who had been left in a similar situation, Scott, we embarked on a site of thousands of university students, teachers and other staff, as well as Jeff, a classless, overweight and crass Texan who was sleeping with more than one of the students. I point out that he was obese not to have a dig, but to give a sense of perspective, because the sheer size of him, and he was a tall chap too, next to the young students he was sleeping with was a sight to behold. Those poor girls. The university was well aware what went on, but turned a blind eye to it. All things considered, a Western face brings in truckloads of money. The experience of mingling with students, playing football and basketball with them, and speaking to them about the intricacies of life was fascinating, and I thoroughly enjoyed this aspect of my stay on campus. I really did. Oh, and if you expect all the Chinese to be short, think again. I looked straining my neck up at the first years, and I'm just over 6 foot, or 184. There were many tall and skillful basket players. Living arrangements were a bloody nightmare. If we supposedly had the more luxurious rooms, I dread to think what the students were holed up in. We had no hot running water, and the kitchen was a disaster. The air conditioning didn't work, and I had wanted out the moment I arrived. Lamentably, I had tied myself into a year contract, and to leave would mean buying myself out of that contract, or, as the case would be, simply fleeing during the night and boarding a flight to the UK. Term time was manageable. The little lesson planning I actually did, teaching the classes and doing the marking, all contributed to a structured life that made living and breathing a new culture worthwhile. The students themselves were a joy, and I enjoyed learning from them as much as they learned from me. They were eager and fun to teach, hardworking and curious. I even had two friends from the UK come visit, and my students were allowed to ask them any question they wanted. Although very shy at first, they soon came out of their shells and they loved every second of it. Scott and I generally spent the evenings in the dining hall before heading into town on days where I didn't visit the gym. We were cut off from everything and everyone. It was a bleak existence in this part of Suzhou, but it was the price we paid for not fulfilling the demands of our previous employers. By this time, I had acquired a lighter and somewhat slower e-bike. A friend had left China and instructed me on where to find the bike. On finding what I thought was the bike, since the key fit in the ignition slot, I discovered that the key for the lock didn't correspond with the lock. After some hard blows with a large concrete slab, the bike was in my possession. I still wonder what that must have looked like to passers-by. The rare sight of a Lao Wai, and the even rarer sight of one smashing a bike lock apart. I had in fact taken the wrong bike, but continued to use it sporadically over the coming months before taking it to and from campus while I lived back in the city. That was a grueling 45-minute morning commute wrapped in scarves and hats. I would later use it to escape the campus daily once I lived there. To this day, I don't know what I did with it. Easy come, easy go. Looking back, making out of the bedlam of the Chinese streets without serious incident or injury is not something I take for granted. I would have to ride some distance from the campus to find any form of entertainment, be it a bar or club. There were dozens of family-run businesses set in lakeside huts. Local food differed in quality as much as it did in variety, but it was always a culinary experience. The crab was particularly good, and Yangcheng Lake is well known for its hairy crab. Being away from the city, there was no English spoken. We got by through pointing, smiles, nodding and shaking of the head. Although my body took a little while to become adjusted, I never once had any kind of food poisoning. And with a few weeks, my hardened immune system was well acquainted with drinking tap water, although this is not advised. I remember reading prior to my trip that it was even recommended to clean one's teeth with bottled water. Such was the potential risk of tap water. At the uni, I had started off well enough there and soon felt at home, but things began to sour the day a Chinese prostitute scrawled a curse in black lipstick on my apartment door, dooming the fifth generation of my children to death. We were no strangers to going out at the weekend into the city. This involved leaving the campus in Yangcheng Lake and taking a 45-minute taxi into the Suzhou city centre. While the students had an 11 p.m. curfew to adhere to, we'd return when we liked, much to the ire of the armed guards who would try to refuse us re-entry around 6 a.m. the following day. On one occasion, my colleague and I returned home in the early hours with two young ladies. The guards at the university campus were by then accustomed to our late-night sessions, but we'd never before returned home with prostitutes. They refused us entry at first, but my companion gave them such an earful in the loudest, foulest local dialect that they soon stood in shock, mouths dropped open like codfish. The two men lowered their guns and stood aside in disbelief. Scott and I had needs. We were men in our 20s. We were not going to get involved with the students, although offers were quite forthcoming. And on reaching our block, we both went to our separate rooms with a girl apiece. History repeated itself once more. Where I should have at least offered the taxi fare home, I refused to hand even a penny over. I was woken the next day by loud banging on my door and immediately questioned by the teaching administrators about the previous night's events. A mature and honest man might have relayed the truth, especially since the guards had seen the women come and go, but I played dumb, pretending not to have seen the Chinese characters scrawled on my door. This was no one-liner. She had covered almost half the door in a curse upon my fifth generation, and had probably used most of her black lipstick in doing so. Until this day, I wonder why it was not wished upon my children, or even my grandchildren.